the diversity of the talks and the number of areas that it is. So before I begin, I just want to point out, so everything I'm going to say that's due to me will be joint with Jeannie. Okay. And so this talk, the theme of this talk is going to be in much the same spirit as the previous talk by Stefan. Namely, I'm going to be trying to explore and exploit the connections between combinatorial invariants coming from quantum algebra in the form of Kolmogorov cohomology and more analytic or geometric invariants coming from gauge theory, in this case, the Hagar-Fleur cohomology, closed up in Sabo. But before I get into anything too technical, let's just begin with the question. Does the Jones polynomial protect the unknown? And so I don't know. And unfortunately, I have no ability to really answer this question or say much about it. But I just put it up here as sort of motivation, in part because I think it's a testament of, despite a lot of effort and a lot of research, we still somehow don't really understand these invariants all that well. And I certainly don't understand them at all. And actually, before I go any further, can the people in the back see this? Can you read this? Okay. And how about if I...
That's about the limit.
Okay, so how about here? Mikhail? Okay. So I can't say much about the Jones polynomial, but thankfully, Kolmogorov has given us a homological refinement of the Jones polynomial, and then we can ask the same question about the Kolmogorov homology. And somehow we are able to answer this question, or we meaning Kronhauer and Murko, and kind of miraculously, it's by connecting Kolmogorov homology, as Stefan alluded to a different invariant coming from the study of Yagnell's theory. So, say the following recent theorem of Kronhauer and Murko. The theorem says that the rank, say, of the reduced Kolmogorov homology of the rank is equal to 1 if and only if L is the unknown. Okay. So, just want to tell you that this isn't by any means even a sketch of a proof, but I'll just tell you the proof logic. The logic of the proof is to first prove a connection theorem. So to connect the Kolmogorov homology with something a bit more understandable, and their theorem is there's a spectral sequence. Term isomorphic to reduced Kolmogorov homology of a length, a mirror of a length more precisely, and E infinity term isomorphic to so-called singular instanton Fleur homology of the length, and this is an analytically defined variant whose differential counts modulized points and modulized bases of anti-self dual. Solutions of the anti-self of Yagnell's equations with prescribed singularities along an outer length. Okay, and then, so having this connection theorem, they basically transferred the detection of Kovanov homology and the unknot into a theorem. About instanton homology. So the detection theorem is that the rank of this instanton, the single instanton invariant, is greater than 1 unless L is isotopic to the unknot. Okay. Okay, so that's the logic of the proof. And so a natural question arises then, I mean, I guess this is the natural question that arises anytime you prove something about knots. You know, so what about links? So of course that's a natural question. But I just want to make a few remarks, because often it's the case that you prove something about knots and then you look at the proof and you say, well, of course it just extended immediately. So the first remark is that that the proof doesn't extend immediately. So the rank, so for instance, the rank of the singular instanton invariant of the Hopf link equals the rank of the instanton invariant of the unlink equals the rank of is all equal to. So you need something more than rank, and that it's actually a kind of a tricky thing that occurs in all the spectral sequences I know of, from one of these quantum type invariants to a fluid type invariant, is that these spectral sequences, there's a lot of spectral sequences, Stefan mentioned several in his talk, but somehow it's very hard to keep track of the gradings in these spectral sequences, and that was the answer to the question of how that Post-Vassallo's special sequence decategorifies. The second remark is that the question, actually the answer to the question, is heightened by some examples of Eliyahu, Kaufman, and Thistlefoot. Who came up with infinitely many distinct two-component links, which had the same Kovanov homology? Oh, sorry. That would be unfortunate for the remainder of the talk. Which had the same Jones polynomial as the two-component element. So, the first theorem state is that this isn't the case for quantum homology. So, namely, Kovanov homology detects the anomaly. The two component element. So, in the sense that, that it's the only two component link with the same component model as the only. Okay. And so I view this theorem as telling me that really the question I just raised about the Jones polynomial is actually a very different question than the question about Kovanov homology and unknot or unlink detection. So I view these questions, you know, the distinction between Jones polynomial on non detection and Kovanov homology on detection is probably in the same level of distinction as that of the Alexander polynomial on non detection versus Knopfler homology on non detection. The Alexander polynomial far from detects on knots, whereas the Knopfler homology is able to do so. And so you notice, obviously, I only have two components here. Um, So what about in components? And well, I don't know the answer to that. I guess I suspect that it detects in component unlinks, but all I can prove is that quantum homology as a module detects in component unlinks. For all. Okay, so what do I mean by Kolmogorov homology as a module? So this is a structure that's I guess somehow implicit in the literature, but maybe hasn't been used or exploited in any explicit way. So I'll spend a fair amount of time reviewing this for those of you who might be only casual followers of Kolmogorov homology. Okay, so let's just recall that Kolmogorov homology is the homology theory we get by applying a 1 plus 1 dimensional TQFT based on the Frobenius algebra f of x mod x squared to the cube of complete resolutions of a given model link diagram. So, like in Stefan's talk, for me f will be z2, and I'll work over z2 throughout. Although I suspect that probably with everything I do, you could raise everything in terms of z coefficients, although it's sort of irrelevant from the perspective of what's motivating this. Okay, so for example, so we have, for each crossing of another link diagram, I have the 0 and 1 resolution. Now I consider all possible ways of resolving all these crossings. Okay, so now I take this cube, and so the vertices are 1.5-folds, and the edges also, of course, have a topological interpretation as a natural setup horizon that takes you between these 1.5-folds. And so I apply my TQFT to that picture. And so what I get then is I get two copies of the vector space for two circles, and k copies for k circles. Example, the diagram looks like this. And then if I merge or split circles with my cubism, then I apply the multiplication or co-multiplication in my algebra respectively. Okay, so this is Kolmogorov homology, as most of us probably know. So where's the module structure here? Well, suppose now take a marked point in my diagram, so I'll call this point P1. Well, that marked point induces a point in each of the resolutions. Okay. And so then I can take that marked point, and it lives on one of these circles, and I can just apply the algebra multiplication by x. So if I call this P1, then I get a multiplication map on each of the vector spaces on the algebraic side. Just applying multiplication by x according to the circle that the given tensor vector. Okay. So that's all well and good. And this is a structure that Kolmogorov did consider when he was defining reduced component homology. So now, but this depends on a choice of points. So if I choose another point, I get another map. This point also descends. Okay, and so now I get another map, which I'll call x2. And so The point is on the same circle as the orange point here, so x1 equals x2. In this case, equals x tends to 1. Now, the distinction here, though, is that x2 is not x tensor 1, but it's 1 tensor x. Okay. So, it's not so hard to see that these maps, which are acting on the vector space of each vertice, they actually fit together to form a chain map. And, moreover, it's just because x in the algebra squares to 0, these chain maps square to 0 as well. And furthermore, the chain maps commute with each other. So these all just follow pretty much immediately from the definitions. And so we have an invariance theorem. So what I'm saying is that I have a module structure on the Kvanov chain complex. So I have an action by x1 xn modulo xi squared. So this acts on the Kvanov chain complex. Okay, and that way that we described. And so this is an invariant of the link in the following sense. And this is just this is somehow implicit in the paperwork Kvanov sets up reduced homology. But given d prime, two diagrams for a link, and two collections of in base points, one on each component of the link, then I have a commutative diagram this map is the module structure induced by the collection of points P on D. And the lower horizontal map is that induced by the collection of points P prime on D prime. Okay, so I have natural map 1 tensor E. Well, propositions where E's are homotopy equivalents. Okay, so I won't prove this, but the proof is a relatively straightforward generalization of Kvanov's proof that his chain complex, the chain homotopy type of his chain complex, is an invariant of the link itself.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Do you mean that if you keep the diagram but change the point, this is also true?
Yes. So I should. So I'd like to make a remark, which I hope will clarify your question. Remark is that this is an invariant of the. You sort of expect that maybe this is an invariant of the not a link itself, but invariant of the pointed link. So that's not the case. The isomorphism type of this module, Kvanov homology, is an invariant of the link, for any collection of points that I would choose. Now, I don't think it's a canonical isomorphism. So if you want to talk about functoriality, then probably the case is this is a canonically associated module structure to an endpointed link. And I haven't gone through the details, but I sort of thought about them. Okay. So
you mentioned this as a possibility, or you know it?
This proposition?
No, about dependence on homotopy.
Oh, I mean, no. I mentioned it as a possibility. I mean, I haven't written anything up. I've thought through it a little bit. It seems reasonable for what I know, but I certainly haven't worked out the details.
Okay.
Okay, so so let's do an example very quickly. Maybe I'll just state the result of an example. So I want to discuss. So we have a hop link up there, let's talk about the quantum module, the hop link, as a bigraded collection of groups. So for me, everything will be just relatively Z plus Z graded. I mean, I'm not too worried about the actual gradings themselves, especially because the special sequences I don't fully understand. I don't understand very much at all how they interact with gradings. So the grading here will be the homological or cohomological grading T. And the vertical axis would be the quantum grading. Okay, and so the hop link has Kolmogorov module rank 4, as I mentioned earlier. And what's the module structure look like? So the module structure in this case is that X1 acts as the orange arrow, just isomorphism between Z2 and itself, and X2 acts as the blue arrow. So as a module then, what is this isomorphic to? Well, I guess it's isomorphic to F plus F, in an ungraded sense, of X squared. Okay. Whereas the quantum module to the other link, two components. Has module structure given by this? So this is isomorphic to f of x1, x2, mod x. It's clear by looking at these relatively graded groups that Kolmogorov homology distinguishes the hop link from the unlink. But the problem is that these connection theorems that relate Kolmogorov homology to some other more controlled invariant, we don't know how they interact with groups. But somehow, the point is that I will be able to keep track of the module structure in these connection theorems. And so it's this module structure, these are very different modules, that will detect the unlink. So let me restate a refined version of both theorems, which I'll then briefly discuss some of the aspects of the proof. So, as we mentioned and as we just saw, the rank doesn't distinguish Kolmogorov homology of the unlink from that of the hop link. So I need to use something to get theorem one. And what we use is, suppose that the Jones polynomial of L evaluated at minus one is equal to zero. So this is the statement that the determinant of the link is zero. So that's the extra, of course, this condition is guaranteed if you have the Kolmogorov homology of the unlink, because the Kolmogorov homology determines Jones polynomial. So that's the only piece of extra information we have, and then the theorem is then the rank of Kolmogorov homology of a link, say reduced Kolmogorov homology, is always bigger than 2, unless L is isotopic to a two-component split link, each of whose components has reduced Kolmogorov homology of rank 1. And so, of course, then by Kronauer-Mucke's theorem, we have the Kapanen-Mollier text that you could look at online. Theorem 2 prime. So, it's a similar type of statement. Suppose that the Kapanen homology of a link is isomorphic to homology is isomorphic to f of x1 to xn minus 1 mod xi squared as a module. So maybe I should point out, so the invariance proposition over here allows us to induce a module structure on the reduced Kapanen homology by the observation that reduced Kapanen homology is just isomorphic to, say, the kernel. But the induced map on homology by any one of the given variables, I'll just denote it by xn so that it's consistent with my notation there. So the reduced Kapanen homology can be viewed as the kernel of the map on homology induced by the action of any one of, of these chain maps described there, or equivalently, it's the homology of the kernel complex. Okay. So, and I should also then say that now the module structure, so reduced Kapanen homology doesn't depend on the, with the coefficient ring I'm using, on which point I choose to take the kernel with respect to. But the module structure that I get may very well. In fact, it does. But nonetheless. This is saying I. Okay. Are there any questions before I go into some of the details?
Did you?
Ah.
Did you write
the? Yeah. I think probably most of you could prove that theorem. Okay. Thank you. So then what do we have? Then L is as above, similar to above. It's isotopic to a n-component split length. Each of whose components has reduced Kapanen homology for has having rank one. Okay. So that completes with Kronauer Mucke is there that applies my original statement. So the spirit of these theorems is proved analogous to Kronauer-Mucke's, is that we need some sort of connection, and then we use that connection to a more manageable invariant together with a detection theorem in that context. So in that context, the connection is the one alluded to by Stefan. So for theorem one, what we need is really only a result of Ostwald and Szabo. And this is just their spectral sequence. there's a special sequence whose E2 term is the Kabanoff homology, the reduced Kabanoff homology of the mirror of a length L, and the Z infinity term is the Haygarth-Fleur homology of the branch double cover of L. So I use the same notation Stefan did. Okay, so that's all we need on the level of connecting Kabanoff homology to Haygarth-Fleur homology for theorem 1. But for theorem 2, we need to refine their spectral sequence. So the spectral sequence is a spectral sequence of modules. It's modules over that ring. Spectral sequence of modules over the ring f of x1 to xl minus 1, where l denotes the number of components of the ring. Okay, mod xi squared. Okay. So in here, I don't mean anything fancy. It's fancy. I don't mean anything. I mean the standard definition of a spectral sequence of modules. I have a sequence of chain complexes, each of which have an action by that ring. By chain maps.
Excuse me, what is the module structure?
Thank you. Yeah, so what's the module structure on the Fleur homology side? So the Haygarth-Fleur homology of a three manifold is naturally a module over the exterior algebra. And well, to object said over first homology, but I'll phrase it a little bit different by first homology by torsion. And again, this is first singular homology of a three manifold on torsion. Okay, and so this ring is naturally a quotient of that ring. So I guess another remark. In the case of the branch double cover, give you a little more intuition as to why you'd expect any type of connection there between the module structures. I mean, you know, so I told you how x acts on the Kabanoff complex, but I should tell you how x acts on the Haygarth-Fleur side. So maybe I won't say exactly where this structure comes from. Basically, it's essentially by defining a chain map. The module structure on Haygarth-Fleur, you can define a chain map given a simple closed curve inside a three manifold. And essentially what this chain map is defined is it's essentially a boundary operator on the Haygarth-Fleur complex. It counts these chain complexes are generated as a group by intersection points of two tori and the symmetric product of a Hagar diagram, or of a Hagar surface for y. And the boundary operator counts J holomorphic Whitney disk connecting those two intersection points. And so what this chain map does is it counts the same thing, but it only counts those J holomorphic Whitney disks that intersect the submanifold of points where one of the points lies on my curve. So it basically keeps track of the intersection of the J holomorphic Whitney disk with a submanifold coming from the curve inside the three manifold pushed onto the Hagar surface. So that's where this chain maps come from. And so now if I have a given variable in this ring, it acts on the Kabanov complex by multiplication by X. So I have these 2 points. These 2 points give rise to my different chain maps. On reduced Kabanov homology, I've gotten rid of one of the actions by, say, P1. Or sorry, no, I got rid of one of my actions by P2. And now, if I take a properly embedded arc, T, from Pn to Pi, the branch double cover, this properly embedded arc connecting the two base points lifts to a simple closed curve inside the three manifold. And then the statement is that, you know, there's a chain map on the E1 page of the spectral sequence. That chain map is actually a filtered chain map between filtered complexes. And then it converges to we have a chain map on the Kabanov complex, which is the E1 page of a spectral sequence. And then that map on homology that under the special sequence converges to the action on the fluid homology induced by the lift of that curve or that arc. Okay. Right, so this is what we use to transfer the problem into Hagar fluid homology. And now, in that context, we need some type of detection theorem. And for each theorem, in terms of two-component versus n-component lengths, we have a different result. For theorem one, what we need, the key ingredient really, is the following. Basically, it says that the rank of fluid homology detects a certain manifold, zero surgery, on the truffle level. So suppose Y is a closed three manifold. Is irreducible. And satisfies its first Betti number is now zero. Then the rank of the Hagar fluid homology of that three manifold is greater than two. Unless y is homeomorphic to zero surgery on the truffle level. By the truffle level, I mean either the positive truffle level or the negative truffle level. They both have the same rank. And it happens to be. The detection theorem we need for the other for the marginal case is essentially saying that Heger Fluidomology detects S1 cross S2 sum ends in the prime decomposition of a given three manifold. So suppose I have not the same assumptions above. Now I have Y is just a closed three manifold. I suppose it's Fluidomology. It's isomorphic to f of x1 up to xn mod xi squared. Then the statement is that that manifold is homeomorphic to a connected sum, a sum manifold M, with N copies of S1 cross S2. Moreover, that three manifold is that three manifold N that I'm not telling you anything about, well, it's very special with respect to Fluidomology. So N is an integral homology three sphere, just meaning it has the same integral singular homology as the three sphere, and it has the same Fluidomology. It has Fluidomology of rank 1, which, for those of you unfamiliar with the theory, is the same as the Fluidomology of the three sphere. And so somehow this is, in both theorems in our proof, this is why we need to appeal to Kronhammer and Rifkind. Because basically we push the theorem as far as we can, but then all of a sudden, if you look at the statement over there, I can't tell you what those ki are. I just know that my link is split, and that each of the components is a Kovanov homology unknot. And over on this side, what's going on is that I pushed everything to the point where I basically reduced the case that I have a three manifold arising as a branch double cover of this link, which has a which may have a sum end that has the same Fluidomology as the three sphere. And so at the moment, one of the most interesting questions, I think, in Heger Fluidomology as a just as a subject is, is this the only is the three sphere the only prime integer homology three sphere satisfying this condition? So we don't know. If we did know, then we wouldn't actually need Kronhammer-Rifkind's theorem to prove these results. Okay. So I see that I have about 4 minutes left. So let me just say, word or two about why, how does Heger Fluidomology, why is it able to detect these three manifolds? So I'll say a few words about theorem one. So for theorem one, so the idea is that Heger Fluidomology detects the Thurston norm. So if you haven't seen it before, this is just, if I have a second homology class in a three manifold, I can ask what's the minimal genus representative of, what's the minimal genus representative?
Orientable.
Sure. What's the minimal genus orientable surface, which is smoothly embedded in the three manifold, and for which the push forward of the second of the fundamental class of that surface equals your favorite second homology class. You ask for basically the best possible surface representing a given homology class. And Fluidomology detects this. And so basically then if the rank of Fluidomology So this implies that if the rank of the floor homology of Y equals 2, then Y has trivial Thurston norm. What that means is that every homologically essential surface in that manifold is either a sphere or a torus. But I've ruled out the existence of essential, homologically essential two spheres with my assumptions. Okay, so this means that that the homology classes I have in this manifold are all represented by tori. And then moreover, so HF, the Hilbert fluid homology of two manifolds detects vibrations. So if I have a homologically essential surface, I can ask whether it arises as the fiber in a vibration of that three-manifold over the circle. And fluid homology does this through a monic condition, which you can view as a categorification of the statement that the Alexander polynomial of fiber three-manifold is monic. And somehow a technical point, which is kind of interesting from the perspective of the details of the proof, is that it's really the twisted fluid homology that we have to use here. And I'll say just one more thing about this in a moment. These two facts, together with an analysis of torus bundles over the circle, is enough to prove this theorem. So that's the key ideas. And so I brought up this twisted coefficient version because I think one interesting problem. Is that, you know, when things got rolling with Hilbert fluid homology, one motivating factor in trying to connect and understand these relationships between Gabanov homology and Hilbert fluid was that Hilbert fluid is very difficult to compute. I mean, it wasn't a combinatorial invariant. It's a priori defined counting holomorphic curves in the symmetric product of a Hilbert splitting. And that's a very difficult problem. Now we have a lot of algorithms to compute fluid homology, so I don't view understanding these connections quite as the motivation isn't quite coming from the desire to compute Hilbert fluid, understand Hilbert fluid from a more combinatorial invariant. So what I'd like to do then is say, well, Hilbert fluid is much better at understanding the geometry when you actually use different coefficient systems. So almost all these theorems, there's some finagling that has to be done in order to take a result about Hilbert fluid homology of twisted coefficients and transfer it to something about untwisted coefficients, because at the end of the day, we know that there's spectral sequences between Gabanov homology and Hilbert fluid homology with regular coefficients. But at this point, there are spectral sequences that start with something and converts to the Hilbert fluid homology of twisted coefficients. And this receptor, the Hilbert fluid homology of twisted coefficients, is much better at interacting with the geometry of three manifolds. And so I think we should probably think about the E2 page of those spectral sequences, and more likely than not, some of those E2 pages will be a not a Lincoln variant in much the same sphere as Gabanov homology. And those invariants are more likely to have a transparent interaction with the geometry and topology of the three-manifold. So I'll stop there.